Good morning, everyone. Ubi caritas, ibi amor est. And I think you can feel there is a lot of love in this room. And I echo what I've heard from other colleagues. I'm full of gratitude. For me, it's a big honor and pleasure to be with you. You who are part of this big Caritas family, as Kathy explained, thank you for the kind welcome. And listening to Jonathan, I thought, this is how Providence works. I'm a bit Mediterranean when it comes to time management, so I have deleted some slides from my presentation, and one was exactly about how can we have so much cheap food, and how is that related to the wages? And there you are. Jonathan took it up, so thank you, wherever you are, Jonathan, to do part of my job. I think my brief was to talk to you about food, and we have heard that part of our work is also very much, how to say, influenced by animals, sheep. I will talk about goats. But the main thing will be about food and hunger, and if the time allows for it, I will also touch upon some other issues like migration, trafficking, and health. And as you heard, Kathy, you could imagine that talking about Caritas can be a day-long speech, and you have not yet finished to tell all the stories. And for me, it has been a great privilege because through these trips, I happen to meet so many diverse people in different continents with different cultures, but nevertheless, you feel the love is there, and across cultures we can understand each other. Just a short word, and I should use this machine, a short word about the Secretariat. So just to make it clear, some people have this idea that the Secretariat in Rome is like the Red Cross headquarters. No, we are 30 people, just that you understand that, including administration. Secondly, what is our job there? So our job there is basically bring the Confederation together. We are not operational, so we learn from those who are operational, but we make connections among member organizations who have a lot of experience to share. We try to bring the voices of those who work at the grassroots level to the UN organizations to tell them what the concerns of people are. So, and what I should as well say, that part of the advocacy work, so I'm not alone, I have a very nice colleague in New York, some of you may know him, Joe Donnelly, and I hope he's better, he has been to the hospital these days, and a team in Geneva who is also working on advocacy. So now let's see if I manage to make that work as I was told. No. So something is wrong. Okay. Not yet. Yes, there it is. So just to add about what is Caritas, I think there are two things which popes said. So, and I think it marks a bit the two poles, if you want to say so, about Caritas. So Pope Francis said, Caritas is the caress of the Church. And Pope Benedict, at our last General Assembly in 2011, called us that we are advocates within the international community of a sound anthropological vision nourished by Catholic social teaching and committed to defending the dignity of human life. Okay. So we are living exciting times in this confederation. Exciting times because, as Kathy mentioned, in 2013, on the 10th of December exactly, we started our first ever global campaign. So Caritas Internationalis has done campaigns, but there were sometimes geographical campaigns, sometimes linked only to certain members. But this time we decided to come under one theme, one human family, food for all, with the ambitious goal to eradicate hunger. Eradicate hunger by 2025. And it's not us who have invented that date. It's a declaration between the African Union and the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, who said it is possible to eradicate hunger by 2025 in Africa. And since it's one of the most affected regions, we just took it on board. And I think what encourages us, you have seen the messages of the Pope on the 10th of December, the day of the wave of prayer, and I imagine that many of you started, and I can tell you as well, she wouldn't tell you, that the idea of the wave of prayer came from this continent. I'm looking at Joan, who had this suggestion. Thank you, Joan. I think it was a great idea, and it brought all the confederation together. And what encourages us is, and here's a piece from the Evangelii Gaudium, which quotes the Brazilian Bishops' Conference, and it says, "We know that there is enough food for everyone and that hunger is a result of a poor distribution of goods and incomes." So I think this campaign has brought us really together under one theme and has been very important. And for me, this campaign personally has been a kind of journey to sharpen my things, my thoughts, and my relationship to food. Oh no, now I'm going back. Sorry if I'm not used to these sophisticated techniques. There we are. By the end of the presentation, I should be able to do it. It resonated a lot yesterday when Father Grudy talked about the heart and the right relationships. And I think what we have to question ourselves, what is our relationship to food? Is that the right relationship? We find it every day in the supermarket, but do we reflect about it? So I had an experience. I once was in the outskirts of Kenya in a parish where communities had to host internally displaced persons. And they were poor themselves already, not able to feed their families, let alone feed other people who poured into the community. And I was asked, mainly women gathered there, to distribute to each of them a kilo of flour. And I started to think, for me, getting a kilo of flour is something very easy. I go to the supermarket, I find plenty of it, and if there is no flour, I will find something else. For these people, this kilo of flour was crucial, was a precious gift. And I think we should start to rethink about food as a precious gift, as a fruit of the work, hard work of some people, and be reminded that food has sacred nature. It's not a good as any other good. And here comes a scandal. And I echo again, Jonathan, we know it, but we don't think about it. Or we don't let our hearts be touched about it. In industrialized countries like this one or the country I come from, Germany, consumers throw away 286 million tons of cereal products. And we are only talking about cereal products. We're not talking about the waste in general. So it corresponds, just so you get an idea, 763 billion boxes of pasta. That's what we throw away in 1 year. And when we speak about food loss and food waste, normally that includes the loss during production, during harvest. So in that case, sometimes people don't know how to conserve food. It's the processing, the distribution, and first and foremost, that's what we can change. It's the consumption. And Europe, North America, and Oceania have the biggest share of food loss during consumption. So it's something to reflect on it. And I think, again, Pope Francis, someone said, we can quote at any moment something very significant. He said in Evangelii Gaudium, can we continue to stand by when food is thrown away while people are starving? This is a case of inequality. So our daily bread, for some of us, that's easy, and for others, it's a struggle every day. So we have 805 million people going hungry every day. 805 million, that's one person in nine. So you can look around, I don't know how many people are around the tables, but it could be around nine. So one of you would go hungry. The most affected areas are sub-Saharan Africa and Southern Asia and East Asia. But it's not only an issue for, you know, what we call least developed countries or developing countries, but it's also, we see it more and more in richer countries due to the economic crisis. More people suffer from hunger. The country where I live, Italy, it is said that out of the 61 million inhabitants of Italy, 10% suffer from poverty and hunger. I hear the same from Caritas Spain, who says their mensas, their soup kitchens, have been filled up with people who cannot afford to buy their food anymore or just sporadically. So I think we need to make a distinction when we speak about hunger, we speak about chronic undernourishment, but in this case, in the richer countries, it might be sporadically that people suffer from hunger, but nevertheless, it is hunger. So here you have some regional figures, and what is interesting about this slide is it makes a comparison between 1990-92 and 2012-2014. You would find the three most affected areas, which are Southern Asia under B, Eastern Asia under D, the green part, and C, Sub-Saharan Africa. But what is even more interesting is that at least in sub-Saharan Africa, in absolute figures, the number of people suffering hunger did not go down, but it grew. And you may remember that there is a commitment by the international community with the Millennium Development Goals that it was said we should halve hunger by 2015. It's this year. It is most likely that we will not succeed. There may be areas in the world where this will work, but in many areas we are not yet there. I thought to explain you a bit the complexities about what is food and the fight of hunger about. I will invite you to a little journey to a country in Africa. This is Malawi. It's a small country where you see the arrow there. And it's thanks to one of my colleagues who works with us on the campaign that I can tell you all these things. So Malawi has a population of 14 million people. There's 1 million farming households. And these farming households often have small plots of lands. And they have to feed up to 6 people on these plots of lands. 80% of the farmers are women, and the great majority are very poor. Very often, people can only harvest once a year. So the food lasts until the end of the year. And my colleague said many people in Malawi go to bed hungry over Christmas. The market is not well organized, so people don't have access to market. And those who benefit, it's not the farmers themselves. So for the same amount, a farmer in Malawi, amount of, let's say, groundnuts, a farmer in Malawi would get $2, while the intermediary sells it for $10 in Europe. The country, Malawi, I think, took a courageous step because they said, or the president, and that's way back in 64, I understood, took a courageous step and said, I'm not going to go outside my country to beg for food. So I will try to do something myself, which I think is already a very important step. So they said, how can we increase the production and productivity? So they decided to promote inorganic fertilizers, fertilizers which allow plants to grow better. That led to increased demand for increased fertilizers, which then led to a price increase for fertilizers. So for one unit fertilizer in 2000, you paid $1. In 2014, you paid $34. And there is people in Malawi who lives on less than $1 per day. So it would mean that they have to use all their spending. So government changed policies and said, we will subsidize the fertilizers so that people can buy cheaper and they can use it. So basically, there was a time, apparently, when this worked, but then clever businessmen or rich people bought the stocks of fertilizers to kind of empty the market and then release it when the demand was very high and to pay it at another price. And so a voucher system was developed so that people could have access to these fertilizers. But you have to imagine that Malawi is a very agricultural country, a lot of rural areas. So how do you get there? So there is a lot of problems and contradictions to solve around food. But then there is also another factor which we see more and more around the world. And I think I'm right to think that people in the US were probably the latest to join in saying, yes, there is something like climate change. I hope I can say that here. but I think there are people in those rural areas, they see that. They say it rains less. So we cannot foresee or we cannot be sure that it will rain in the season. And sometimes if it rains too much. There was floodings in Malawi just 2 weeks ago. And so if it rains too much, again, the harvest is gone and people have nothing. But it's also because to fight hunger, it's to change habits. People were used to have rain-fed agriculture. So you have to teach people, what can we do to conserve water, or can we also plant other plants which are more resistant? And moreover, the biggest contradiction, one-third of Malawi consists of water. So there needs something to be solved there. So the results were, or are still, because I spoke to my colleague 2 weeks ago, there is less, little production. Then there is an important element. 30% of the harvest is often lost due to pests, due to insects or illnesses which the harvest gets. So because people are not used or don't have ways to conserve what they produce. And then there is another element, the cultural dimension. In Malawi, I was told, food, proper food, means maize. And the colleague told me, if you go into a house of a person and they put in front of you a plate of rice, people will eat it, but they will still wait for the maize because the maize is considered as the proper food. So there needs to be probably also a change in that mentality. So income from agriculture in Malawi is low, malnutrition and stuntedness are rampant, child mortality and morbidity are closely connected to maternal malnutrition. So what is Caritas Malawi doing? I think first and foremost, and that's something very important, I've heard that here since yesterday many times, to be with the communities to help them to become, as we call it, resilient. So it's not coming with a program and say, okay, that's how we are going to solve it, but do a learning path with the communities. And that's what my colleague in Malawi told me is the most important thing. Then they promoted organic fertilizer, because organic fertilizer is cheaper, you can do it yourself, it improves the soil, it retains, contains erosion, it can help water retention. And so you think, why didn't people think earlier about it? And there, maybe the power of market comes in again. Caritas Malawi helps people to learn how to store their products, to store water, to diversify their production. So they have developed a scheme where they say, okay, you will not only live on agriculture, but we will give you livestock, animals, goats. Goats are resistant. And so people in need get, let's say, a pair of goats. Once this pair of goats gets an offspring, the offspring goes to another people in need in the community, which is also a way of making the community responsible for itself. So it's not someone from outside, but it's the community who cares for the community. And so I think in the area, which is a remote area in Malawi, I understood in 2004 people were still dying from hunger, whereas between 2008 and 2014, thanks to the interventions and the joint learning from the community, this situation has improved, and the people are very proud of it. And just look at this lady. I don't know if you see her very well. This is Esther from Malawi. She has six children, but she has also to care for her mother. And she was really living on piecemeal work, because sometimes what she had on her plot of land was not sufficient to feed her family. And now, since she was part of this livestock pass-on scheme, she could sell two goats, invest in her farm, get better yields due to organic fertilizers, and send her children to school. So I think that's a very good and very nice achievement for her, and I think there are many other cases like that. And I want to point out there is an issue there, women and food. I think in some countries, up to, and that applies probably to the least developed countries, up to 78% of women who are economically active work or live from agriculture. That's a figure of 2010, but I understood it has not changed very much. And FAO says that if we would give those women the access to resources like credits, technical knowledge, and we would give them access to rights, 130 million people could be lifted out of hunger. So if there would be one thing I would ask for change is let's give more women who do the hard work resources and rights. And I think to counteract that, Caritas Internationalis, together with a foundation from Liechtenstein, we put out an award. It's called the Women Sowers of Development Award, and it's to give visibility and value to the work women do to secure food for their families and for their communities. It's the first ever award. So we are in the year of the first evers. And very interesting. We got 68 applicants, very interesting projects. One of those here from the US. And we will see who is the winner. The winner will be announced on the 8th of March, International Women's Day. Okay. There is another issue which I would like to point out is not many people know that, in fact, to have food is a human right. And I think even less so those who... Thank you. Even less so those who are affected by food and hunger. So there is an instrument, an international instrument, which is called the Convention on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, which was adopted in 1966. And it says that the state parties who adhere to this covenant, and I can tell you the U.S. signed it but did not ratify it, recognize the fundamental right of everyone to be free from hunger, and the countries who are state parties should take the measures and programs to lift people out of hunger. So that's why we are dreaming, we say next year is the 50th anniversary of the adoption of this convention. We would like to see the UN General Assembly having a session on the state of the art about food. And it could be very well linked to the sustainable development agenda, because one of the goals is still to have a world free from hunger. So we are working on that with our colleague in New York. But you can certainly spread the news as well, wherever you go. So, as I said, our daily bread is a complex issue. I think you heard a lot about it's related to access to water, to land, to infrastructure, to governance. It's important to have monitoring systems to say who controls if really progress is happening. And I think it would be great to have civil society being part of it. There are two issues which I would briefly like to highlight. One is the issue of price speculation. Food is treated like a commodity on stock markets, and that raises the prices for poor people. And so the question really is that moral? Can that be controlled? I'm not a stock market expert, but what I read that years ago there was more control over these kind of speculation, whereas now there is more freedom. And I don't know if we can kind of go back and control that, just because food is not a commodity as any other. And the second thing, you see the little seeds over there on the bowl. And what I just learned, and I thought this is quite scandalous, I learned it only recently, that a lot of seeds for farmers are patented. So, and people, if they want to sell their products, they have to buy those seeds. So again, they are in the hands of the market and what the market dictates. And even more so, I heard that some countries want to forbid that people use autochthonous seeds, so the seeds they produce. And on top of that, apparently, there are seeds, genetically modified, who kind of don't produce seeds afterwards. And I think this is just scandalous, because you make people dependent. Every time a farmer wants to go to, plant food to sow something, he has to buy seeds again and again. And again, I would encourage you to raise that whenever or wherever you have a chance to advocate. So I will not go through all these points, just to be respectful of the time and tell you a few other things. But I think I spoke about controlling investment speculation on food, providing more support to smallholder farmers, especially women. Look at trade agreements would be another thing. There is a trade agreement between the EU and the US going on, apparently behind closed doors, and apparently it will lead to, lowering food safety standards, and there's no access whatsoever for small farmers to be part of those trades. So I think this would be something which I would encourage you to take forward. Very important. There is something called the Green Climate Fund. The Green Climate Fund is something, it's one of the little things people could agree in 20 years of negotiation over climate change. 20 years of negotiation. There is a Green Climate Fund. We have heard that the US will put $30 billion in that. But we would like to see this money go to affected communities so that they can deal with the adverse conditions. And that means the procedures to get to that money should not be overcomplicated, because otherwise, I can assure you, it will never reach people. So our relation to food and the fight against hunger are closely related, and I think we have to reinforce our advocacy on that, and you are an audience which could do that, like others in other parts of the world. The campaign, I will not go through all this, but it has been a miracle. I think the campaign for Caritas has been a miracle, let alone Father Larry Snyder opening his kitchen and cooking a meal and sharing that with everyone. But I think we had many members participating in different ways, and I hope we can go on doing that work, because some people said, now we are in the situation that we can do the right advocacy. So we started to sensitize, mobilize people, but now we are doing the right advocacy. Again. And I think when it comes to advocacy, 2015, this year, which is still kind of fresh, will be a challenging calendar for advocates. There is something called the Universal Exposition in Milan. It will open its doors on the 1st of May 2015. The topic is Feeding the Planet, Energy for Life, and there will be first-time civil society participation. Caritas is amongst them, and we will have a whole day dedicated to Caritas on the 19th of May. And it was nice to see that Pope Francis, I think he has delivered the message yesterday for the people preparing the expo and for the people involved there. And he said, make your choices starting from the priorities. Human dignity, be men and women witness of charity, and do not be afraid to care for the earth, which is the mother of all. And I think it's probably the first time where you have, you know, not only the rich, the business, in such an exposition, but also the voice of the poor. But there will be also our own General Assembly this year, where we will see maybe new themes, new topics coming up. There will be the UN General Assembly, I said that, Sustainable Development Goals are on the agenda, and there will be a very important conference of the parties of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, where people say this time they will commit to something, and we hope that very much, and we will be present. Why are we doing all that? I think, again, encouragement by Pope Francis, and I think an authentic faith, he said, always involves a deep desire to change the world, to transmit values, to leave this earth somehow better than we found it. And I hope this is an encouragement for all of you. My presentation is a bit longer, but I'll stop here. You can read the other things just because it's time. And thank you for listening.